There was a crowd in the big audience chamber when Vimes finally went downstairs. They were milling about, worried and unsure, and like important men everywhere, when they were worried and unsure, they got angry. The first to bustle up to Vimes was Mr. Boggis of the Guild of Thieves.
"Yeah, what's going on, Vimes?" he demanded.
He met Vimes's stare.
"Sir Samuel, I mean," he said, losing a certain amount of bustle.
"I believe Lord Vetinari has been poisoned," said Vimes.
The background muttering stopped. Boggis realized that, since he had been the one to ask the question, he was now the man on the spot.
Fatally, he said.
In the silence, a pin would have clanged.
"Not yet," said Vimes.
Around the hall there was a turning of heads. The focus of the universal attention was Dr. Downey, head of the Guild of Assassins. Downey nodded.
"I'm not aware of any arrangement with regard to Lord Vetinari," he said. "Besides, as I am sure is common knowledge, we have set the price for the patrician at $1 million.
"And who has that sort of money, indeed?" said Vimes.
"Well, you, for one, Sir Samuel," said Downey.
There was some nervous laughter.
We wish to see Lord Vetinari in any case," said Boggis.
"No."
"No? And why not, pray?"
"Doctor's orders."
"Really? Which doctor?"
Behind Vimes, Sergeant Colan shut his eyes.
"Dr. James Folsom," said Vimes.
It took a few seconds before someone worked this out.
"What? You can't mean Donut Jimmy? He's a horse doctor."
"So I understand," said Vimes.
"But why?"
"Because many of his patients survive," said Vimes.
He raised his hands as the protests grew.
"And now, gentlemen, I must leave you. Somewhere there's a poisoner. I'd like to find him before he becomes a murderer."
He went back up the stairs, trying to ignore the shouts behind him.
"You sure about old Donut, sir?"
said Colan, catching him up.
"Well, do you trust him?" said Vimes.
"Donut? Of course not."
"Right. He's untrustworthy, and so we don't trust him. So that's all right. But I've seen him revive a horse when everyone else said it was fit only for the knackers. Horse doctors have to get results, Fred."
And that was true enough. When a human doctor, after much bleeding and cupping, finds that a patient has died out of sheer desperation, he can always say, "Dear me, will of the gods, that'll be $30, please," and walk away a free man. This is because human beings are not, technically, worth anything. A good racehorse, on the other hand, may be worth $20,000. A doctor who lets one hurry off too soon to that great big paddock in the sky may well expect to hear, out of some dark alley, a voice saying something on the lines of, "Mr. Chrysoprase is very upset," and find the brief remainder of his life full of incident.
"No one seems to know where Captain Carrot and Angua are," said Colan. "It's their day off, and Nobby's nowhere to be found."
"Well, that's something to be thankful for."
"Bingley, bingley, bong, beep," said a voice from Vimes's pocket.
He lifted out the little organizer and raised the flap.
"Yes?"
12 noon, said the imp. "Lunch with Lady Sybil."
It stared at their faces.
That's all right, isn't it?"
it said. Cheery Littlebottom wiped his brow.
"Ah, Commander Vimes is right. It could be arsenic," he said. "It looks like arsenic poisoning to me. Look at his colour."
Nasty stuff," said Donut Jimmy. "Has he been eating his bedding?"
"All the sheets seem to be here, so I suppose the answer is no."
"How's he pissing?"
The usual way, I assume."
Donut sucked at his teeth. He had amazing teeth. It was the second thing everyone noticed about him. They were the colour of the inside of an unwashed teapot.
"Walk him round a bit on the loose rein," he said.
The patrician opened his eyes.
"You are a doctor, aren't you?" he said.
Donut Jimmy gave him an uncertain look. He was not used to patients who could talk.
Well, yeah, I've had a lot of patients," he said.
"Indeed, I have very little," said the patrician.
He tried to lift himself off the bed and slumped back.
I'll mix up a draught," said Donut Jimmy, backing away. "You're to hold his nose and pour it down his throat twice a day, right? And no oats."
He hurried out, leaving Cheery alone with the patrician. Corporal Littlebottom looked around the room.
Vimes hadn't given him much instruction. He'd said, "I'm sure it won't be the food tasters. For all they know, they might be asked to eat the whole plateful. Still, we'll get detritus to talk to them. You find out the how, right, and then leave the who to me."
If you didn't eat or drink a poison, what else was left? Probably you could put it on a pad and make someone breathe it, or dribble some in their ear while they slept, or they could touch it, maybe a small dart, or an insect bite. The patrician stirred and looked at Cheery through watery red eyes.
"Tell me, young man, are you a policeman?"
Just started, sir.
You appear to be of the dwarf persuasion.
Cheery didn't bother to answer. There was no use denying it. Somehow people could tell if you were a dwarf just by looking at you.
"Arsenic is a very popular poison," said the patrician. "Hundreds of uses around the home. Crushed diamonds used to be in vogue for hundreds of years, despite the fact they never worked. Giant spiders, too, for some reason. Mercury is for those with patience. Aquafortis for those without. Cantharides has its followers. Much can be done with the secretions of various animals. The bodily fluids of the caterpillar of the quantum weather butterfly will render a man quite helpless. But we return to arsenic like an old friend." There was a drowsiness in the patrician's voice.
"Is that not so, young veterinari?" "Yes, indeed, sir. Correct. But where, then, shall we put it, seeing that all will look for it?"
"In the last place they will look, sir.
Wrong. Foolish. We put it where no one will look at all."
The voice faded to a murmur. The bed linen, Cheery thought, even clothes, into the skin, slowly. Cheery hammered on the door. A guard opened it.
"Get another bed."
"What?"
"Another bed from anywhere, and fresh bed linen."
He looked down. There wasn't much of a carpet on the floor, even so in a bedroom where people might walk with bare feet.
"And take away this rug and bring another one."
"What else?" Detritus came in, nodded at Cheery, and looked carefully around the room. Finally, he picked up a battered chair.
"This'll have to do," he said. "If he want, he can break the back off it."
"What?"
said Cheery. "Old Donut said for to get a stool sample," said Detritus, going out again.
Cheery opened his mouth to stop the troll and then shrugged. Anyway, the less furniture in here, the better. And that seemed about it, short of stripping the wallpaper off the wall. Sam Vimes stared out of the window. Veterinari hadn't bothered much in the way of bodyguards. He had used, that is, he still did use, food tasters. But that was common enough. Mind you, Veterinari had added his own special twist. The tasters were well paid and treated, and they were all sons of the chief cook. But his main protection was that he was just that bit more useful alive than dead, from everyone's point of view. The big, powerful guilds didn't like him, but they liked him in power a lot more than they liked the idea of someone from a rival guild in the oblong office. Besides, Lord Veterinari represented stability. It was a cold and clinical kind of stability, but part of his genius was the discovery that stability was what people wanted more than anything else. He'd said to Vimes once, in this very room, standing at this very window, "They think they want good government and justice for all, Vimes, yet what is it they really crave deep in their hearts? Only that things go on as normal and tomorrow is pretty much like today." Now Vimes turned round.
"What's my next move, Fred?"
"Dunno, sir."
Vimes sat down in the patrician's chair. "Can you remember the last patrician?"
"Old Lord Snapcase? And the one before him? Lord Winder? Oh, yeah. Nasty pieces of work they were. At least this one didn't giggle or wear a dress."
The past tense, thought Vimes. It creeps in already. Not long past, but already very tense.
"It's gone very quiet downstairs, Fred," he said. "Plotting don't make a lot of noise, sir, generally. Veterinari's not dead, Fred."
"Yes, sir, but he's not exactly in charge, is he?"
Vimes shrugged. "No one's in charge, I suppose."
"Could be, sir. There again, you never know your luck."
Colin was standing stiffly to attention, with his eyes firmly fixed on the middle distance and his voice pitched carefully to avoid any hint of emotion in the words. Vimes recognized the stance. He used it himself when he had to.
"What do you mean, Fred?"
he said.
"Not a thing, sir. Figure of speech, sir."
Vimes sat back. This morning, he thought, I knew what the day held. I was going to see about that damn coat of arms. Then there was my usual meeting with Veterinari. I was going to read some reports after lunch. Maybe go and see how they're getting on with the new watch house in Chitling Street and have an early night. Now Fred's suggesting... What?
Listen, Fred, if there is to be a new ruler, it won't be me.
Who'll it be, sir?
Colon's voice still held that slow, deliberate tone.
How should I know? It could be...
The gap opened ahead of him, and he could feel his thoughts being sucked into it.
You're talking about Captain Carrot, aren't you, Fred?
Could be, sir. I mean, none of the guilds have let some other guild bloke be ruler now, and everyone likes Captain Carrot, and, well, rumours got about that he's the heir to the throne, sir.
There's no proof of that, Sergeant.
Not for me to say, sir. Dunno about that. Dunno what is proof,
said Colon, with just a hint of defiance.
But he's got that sword of his, and the birthmark shaped like a crown, and, well, everybody knows he's king. It's his charisma.
Charisma, thought Vimes. Oh, yes. Carrot has charisma. He makes something happen in people's heads. He can talk a charging leopard into giving up and handing over its teeth and doing good work in the community, and that would really upset the old ladies. Vimes distrusted charisma.
No more kings, Fred.
Right you are, sir. By the way, Nobby's turned up.
Oh, the day gets worse and worse, Fred.
You said you talked to him about all these funerals, sir?
The job goes on, I suppose. All right, go and tell him to come up here.
Vimes was left to himself. No more kings. Vimes had difficulty in articulating why this should be so, why the concept revolted in his very bones. After all, a good many of the patricians had been as bad as any king, but they were sort of bad on equal terms. What set Vimes's teeth on edge was the idea that kings were a different kind of human being, a higher life form, somehow magical. But, there was some magic at that. Ankh-Morpork still seemed to be littered with royal this and royal that, little old men who got paid a few pence a week to do a few meaningless chores, like the master of the king's keys, or the keeper of the crown jewels, even though there were no keys and certainly no jewels. Royalty was like dandelions. No matter how many heads you chopped off, the roots were still there underground, waiting to spring up again. It seemed to be a chronic disease. It was as if even the most intelligent person had this little blank spot in their heads where someone had written, "Kings! What a good idea!" Whoever had created humanity had left in a major design flaw. It was its tendency to bend at the knees. There was a knock at the door. It should not be possible for a knock to sound surreptitious, yet this knock achieved it. It had harmonics. They told the hindbrain, the person knocking will, if no one eventually answers, open the door anyway, and sidle in, whereupon he will certainly nick any smokes that are lying around, read any correspondence that catches his eye, open a few drawers, take a nip out of such bottles of alcohol as are discovered, but stop short of a major crime, because he is not criminal in the sense of making a moral decision, but in the sense that a weasel is evil. It is built into his very shape. It was a knock with a lot to say for itself.
"Come in, Nobby," said Vimes wearily.
Corporal Nobbs sidled in. It was another special trait of his that he could sidle forwards as well as sideways. He saluted awkwardly. There was something absolutely changeless about Corporal Nobbs, Vimes told himself. Even Fred Colon had adapted to the changing nature of the city watch, but nothing altered Corporal Nobbs in any way. It wouldn't matter what you did to him, there was always something fundamentally nobby about Corporal Nobbs. Nobby?
Yes, sir?
Take a seat, Nobby. Corporal Nobbs looked suspicious. This was not how a dressing down was supposed to begin.
Fred said you wanted to see me, Mr. Vimes, there, on account of timekeeping.
Did I? Oh, yes. Nobby, how many grandmother's funerals have you really been to?
Three, said Nobby uncomfortably.
Three?
It turned out Nanny Nobbs weren't quite dead the first time.
So why have you taken all this time off?
Don't like to say, sir.
Why not?
You're going to go spare, sir.
Spare?
You know, sir, throw a wobbler.
I might, Nobby, Vimes sighed, but it'll be nothing to what'll get heaved if you don't tell me.
Thing is, it's the Tri-Center, this 300-year celebration thing next year, Mr. Vimes.
Yes, Nobby licked his lips.
I didn't like to ask for time off special. Fred said you were a bit sensitive about it all. But you know I'm in the peeled nuts, sir.
Vimes nodded. Those clowns who dress up and pretend to fight old battles with blunt swords, he said.
The Ankh-Morpork Historical Recreation Society, sir,
said Nobby, a shade reproachfully.
That's what I said. Well, we're going to recreate the Battle of Ankh-Morpork for the celebration, see? And that means extra practice.
It all begins to make sense, said Vimes, nodding wearily. You've been marching up and down with your tin pike, eh? In my time.
Not exactly, Mr. Vimes. I've been riding up and down on my white horse, to tell the truth.
Ah, playing at being general, eh?
Bit more than a general, sir.
Go on. Nobby's Adam's apple bobbed nervously.
I'm going to be King Lorenzo, sir. The last king, the one you're...
The air froze. You are going to be, Vimes began, unpeeling each word like a sullen grape of wrath.
I said you'd go spare, said Nobby. Fred Colon said you'd go spare too.
Why are you...
We drew lots, sir.
And you lost, Nobby squirmed.
Not exactly lost, sir. Not precisely lost. More sort of won,
sir.
Everyone wanted to play him. I mean, you get a horse and a good costume and everything, sir. And he was a king, when all said and done, sir.
The man was a vicious monster.
Well, it was all a long time ago, sir, said Nobby anxiously.
Vimes calmed down a little. And who drew the straw to play Stoneface Vimes? Nobby. Nobby hung his head.
No one, sir. No one wanted to play him, sir.
The little corporal swallowed, and then plunged onwards with the air of a man determined to get it all over with.
So we're making a man out of straw, sir, so he'll burn nicely when we throw him on the bonfire in the evening. There's going to be fireworks, sir, he added with dreadful certainty.
Vimes's face shut down. Nobby preferred it when people shouted. He had been shouted at for most of his life. He could handle shouting. No one wanted to be Stoneface Vimes, Vimes said coldly.
On account of him being on the losing side, sir.
Losing? Vimes' iron heads won. He ruled the city for 6 months. Nobby squirmed again.
Yeah, but... Everyone in the society says he didn't ought to have, sir. They said it was just a fluke, sir. After all, he was outnumbered 10 to 1, and he had warts, sir. And he was a bit of a bastard, sir, when all said and done. He did chop off a king's head, sir. You've got to be a bit of a nasty type to do that, sir. Saving your presence, Mr. Vimes.
Vimes shook his head. What did it matter anyway? But it did matter somewhere. It had all been a long time ago. It didn't matter what a bunch of deranged romantics thought. Facts were facts. All right, I understand, he said. It's almost funny, really. Because there's something else I've got to tell you, Nobby.
Yes, sir,
said Nobby, looking relieved. Do you remember your father? Nobby looked about to panic again. What kind of a question is that to suddenly ask anybody, sir?
Purely a social inquiry. Old Sconner, sir? Not much, sir. Never used to see him much, except when the military police used to come for to drag him out of the attic.
Do you know much about your antecedents?
That is a lie, sir. I haven't got no antecedents, sir, no matter what you might have been told.
Oh, good. You don't actually know what antecedents means, do you, Nobby? Nobby shifted uneasily. He didn't like being questioned by policemen, especially since he was one.
Not in so many words, sir.
You never got told anything about your forebears?
Another worried expression crossed Nobby's face, so Vimes quickly added, "Your ancestors?"
"Only old Sconner, sir. Sir, if all this is working up to asking about them sacks of vegetables which went missing from the shop in Treacle Mine Road, I was not anywhere near the..."
Vimes waved a hand vaguely. "He didn't leave you anything, or anything? Couple of scars, sir, and this trick elbow of mine? It aches sometimes when the weather changes. I always remembers old Sconner when the wind blows from the hub." "Ah, right. And this, of course," Nobby fished around behind his rusting breastplate. And that was a marvel, too. Even Sergeant Colan's armour could shine, if not actually gleam. But any metal anywhere near Nobby's skin corroded very quickly. The corporal pulled out a leather thong that hung around his neck. There was a gold ring on it. Despite the fact that gold cannot corrode, it had nevertheless developed a patina.
"He left it to me when he was on his deathbed," said Nobby.
"Well, when I say left it,
did he say anything?"
"Well, yeah, he did say, 'Give it back, you little bugger, sir.' See, he had it on a string round his neck, sir, just like me. But it's not like a proper ring, sir. I'd have flogged it, but it's all I got to remember him by, except when the wind blows from the hub."
Vimes took the ring and rubbed it with a finger. It was a seal ring with a coat of arms on it. Age and wear and the immediate presence of the body of Corporal Nobbs had made it quite unreadable.
"You are armigerous, Nobby."
Nobby nodded.
"But I got a special shampoo for it, sir."
Vimes sighed. He was an honest man. He'd always felt that was one of the biggest defects in his personality.
"When you've got a moment, nip along to the College of Heralds in Mollymog Street, will you? Take this ring with you, and say I sent you."
"Eh, it's all right, Nobby," said Vimes. "You won't get into trouble. Not as such." "If you say so, sir.
And you don't have to bother with the sir, Nobby."
"Yes, sir."
When Nobby had gone, Vimes reached behind the desk and picked up a faded copy of Twerp's Peerage, or as he personally thought of it, The Guide to the Criminal Classes. You wouldn't find slum dwellers in these pages, but you would find their landlords. And while it was regarded as pretty good evidence of criminality to be living in a slum, for some reason, owning a whole street of them merely got you invited to the very best social occasions. These days, they seem to be bringing out a new edition every week. Dragon had been right about one thing, at least. Everyone in Ankh-Morpork seemed to be hankering after more arms than they were born with. He looked up De Nobbs. There even was a damn coat of arms. One supporter of the shield was a hippo, presumably one of the royal hippos of Ankh-Morpork and therefore the ancestor of Roderick and Keith. The other was a bull of some sort, with a very Nobby-like expression. It was holding a golden ankh, which, this being the De Nobbs coat of arms, it had probably stolen from somewhere. The shield was red and green. There was a white chevron with five apples on it. Quite what they had to do with warfare was unclear. Perhaps they were some kind of jolly visual pun, or play on words that had had them slapping their thighs down at the Royal College of Arms. Although probably, if Dragon slapped his thigh too hard, his leg would fall off. It was easy enough to imagine an ennobled Nobbs. Because where Nobby went wrong was in thinking small. He sidled into places and pinched things that weren't worth much. If only he'd sidled into continents and stolen entire cities, slaughtering many of the inhabitants in the process, he'd have been a pillar of the community. There was nothing in the book under Vimes. Suffer not injustice, Vimes wasn't a pillar of the community. He killed a king with his own hands. It needed doing, but the community, whatever that was, didn't always like the people who did what needed to be done, or said what had to be said. He put some other people to death as well, that was true, but the city had been lousy. There'd been a lot of stupid wars. We were practically part of the Clatchian Empire. Sometimes you needed a bastard. History had wanted surgery. Sometimes Dr. Chopper is the only surgeon to hand. There's something final about an axe. But kill one wretched king, and everyone calls you a regicide. It wasn't as if it was a habit or anything. Vimes had found old Stoneface's journal in the Unseen University Library. The man had been hard, no doubt about that. But they were hard times. He'd written, "In the fires of struggle, let us bake new men who will notty heed the old lies." but the old lies had won in the end. He said to people, "You're free," and they said, "Hooray," and then he showed them what freedom costs, and they called him a tyrant. And as soon as he'd been betrayed, they milled around a bit like barn-bred chickens who've seen the big world outside for the first time, and then they went back into the warm and shut the door.
Bing, bong, bingly, beep.
Vimes sighed and pulled out his organizer. Yes.
Memo, appointment with bootmaker, 2 p.m.,
said the imp. It's not 2 o'clock yet, and that was Tuesday in any case, said Vimes.
So I'll cross it off the list of things to do, then.
Vimes put the disorganized organizer back in his pocket and went and looked out of the window again. Who had a motive for poisoning Lord Vetinari? No, that wasn't the way to crack it. Probably if you went to some outlying area of the city and confined your investigations to little old ladies who didn't get out much, what with all the wallpaper over the door and everything, you might be able to find someone without a motive. But the man stayed alive by always arranging matters so that a future without him represented a riskier business than a future with him still upright. The only people, therefore, who'd risk killing him were madmen, and the gods knew Ankh-Morpork had enough of them, or someone who was absolutely confident that if the city collapsed, he'd be standing on top of the pile. If Fred were right, and the sergeant was generally a good indicator of how the man in the street thought, because he was the man in the street, then that person was Captain Carrot. But Carrot was one of the few people in the city who seemed to like Vetinari. Of course, there was one other person who stood to gain. Damn, thought Vimes. It's me, isn't it? There was another knock at the door. He didn't recognize this one. He opened the door cautiously.
It's me, sir, Littlebottom.
Come in, then. It was nice to know there was at least one person in the world with more problems than him. How is his lordship?
Stable, said Littlebottom.
Dead is stable, said Vimes.
I mean he's alive, sir, and sitting up reading. Mr. Donut made up some sticky stuff that tasted of seaweed, sir, and I mixed up some glue-ball salts. Sir, you know the old man in the house on the bridge?
What old... Oh, yes. It seemed a long time ago. What about him?
Well, you asked me to look round, and I took some pictures. This is one, sir.
He handed Vimes a rectangle that was nearly all black.
Odd. Where'd you get it?
Have you ever heard the story about dead men's eyes, sir?
Assume I haven't had a literary education, Littlebottom.
Well, they say...
Who say?
They say, sir. You know, they.
The same people who are everyone in Everyone Knows? The people who live in the community?
Yes, sir. I suppose so, sir.
Vimes waved a hand.
Oh, them. Well, go on.
They say that the last thing a dying man sees stays imprinted in his eyes, sir.
Oh, that. That's just an old story.
Yes, amazing, really. I mean, if it weren't true, you'd have thought it wouldn't have survived, wouldn't you? I thought I saw this little red spark, so I got the imp to paint a really big picture before it faded completely. And right in the centre...
Couldn't the imp have made it up? Said Vimes, staring at the picture again.
They haven't got the imagination to lie, sir. What they see is what you get.
Glowing eyes.
2 red dots, said Littlebottom, conscientiously, which might indeed be a pair of glowing eyes, sir.
Good point, Littlebottom, Vimes rubbed his chin. Blast. I just hope it's not a god of some sort. That's all I need at a time like this. Can you make copies so I can send them to all the watch-houses?
Yes, sir. The imp's got a good memory.
Hop to it, then.
But before Littlebottom could go, the door opened again. Vimes looked up. Carrot and Angua were there.
Carrot? I thought you were on your day off.
We found a murder, sir, at the Dwarf Bread Museum, but when we got back to the watch-house, they told us Lord Vetinari's dead.
Did they? Thought Vimes. That's rumour for you. If we could modulate it with truth, how useful it could be. He's breathing well for a corpse, he said. I think he'll be okay. Someone got past his guard, that's all. I've got a doctor to see him, don't worry. Someone got past his guard, he thought. Yes, and I'm his guard.
I hope the man's a leader in the field, that's all I can say, said Carrot severely.
He's even better than that. He's the doctor to the leaders of the field, said Vimes. I'm his guard, and I didn't see it coming.